It is Thursday, July 10th, 2008. Sam Cedar in from Mike Malloy. Hello, Truth Seekers. Numbers 800-989-1480. We're streaming live at NovamRadio.com. Sammy Cam in full effect at SamCedarShow.com. You're all whiners. You're all just a bunch of whiners. You American, you whiners. You people make me sick with your whining and your foreclosures and your job losses and your increased mortgage payments and your bank failures and your inflation and you whine and you whine and you whine. With your imaginary job losses and your imaginary credit crunches. You whiners. There you have it, folks. John McCain's economic plans unveiled for you by his top economic advisor. You're all whiners. Stop your complaining. Why don't you become a millionaire? You're ruining it for the millionaires with your whining. You can't go out and enjoy some foamed almond oil or whatever it is. You can't go out and have some type of soy-based salmon dinner because you got all these people whining about the price of food and the price of milk and the price of gas and the wine. John McCain's economic plan, stop your whining. Be rich. Marry an heiress. Just stop your whining. God, you're ruining it for those of us who have no reason to whine. I can't even enjoy wearing my $2,000 suit because of all the whining I hear. That apparently, John McCain's top economic advisor, not backing down from his statements that you're all whiners. I mean, is there anyone who's really planning to vote for this guy? I mean, I get the feeling that he's just trying to wrap this thing up. I mean, he starts the week off saying that Social Security, an absolute disgrace. Because of all the whiners who retire and they don't want to be in poverty and they don't want to eat cat food. They're just whining. Whining and ruining it for the millionaires. Grow up, folks. Grow up. And your imaginary recessions. That's Phil Graham, ladies and gentlemen. John McCain's top economic advisor just unleashing today. Now, here's a guy, former senator. They call him Foreclosure Phil Graham. Because of all the laws he championed that created this unregulated market for these derivatives and these packaged mortgages. The guy who, when his wife was working for Enron, incidentally, made sure that commodity trades were unregulated so that energy speculators like, oh, coincidentally, Enron, were able basically to defraud California and all their pensioners and all their employees. And all you people do is you whine and you moan and you bitch and you with inflation and gas costs too much and just be a millionaire, folks. Just be a millionaire. And maybe if you were a millionaire, you would start to see just how annoying it is to hear all you plebs, you peasants, you citizens of this country whining about your job losses. Do you think it's fun being a millionaire when you have to hear all these complaints? John McCain, unavowed, I mean, self-admitted, multiple occasions, knows nothing about economics. But his top economic advisor certainly does, apparently. And that is the problem, is that you people are all mental. You're imagining these things. Former Senator Phil Graham, vice chairman of Swiss Bank UBS, he's also a lobbyist on their behalf, is the co-chairman of Senator John McCain's campaign. In an interview with the Washington Times, he said that Mr. McCain may inherit a sluggish economy, weighed down above all by the conviction of many Americans that economic conditions are the worst in 2 or 3 decades, and that the economy is in decline. You see, folks, that's the biggest problem with the economy. It's you people. It's you people with your silly convictions about, well, I can't pay my mortgage. Well, I'm seeing job losses. I haven't had a raise in 10 years. Don't you know, ladies and gentlemen,
come with me,
that you can make it all
in
go
a
away?
World of pure imagination.
Take a look. Just look at the cotton candy skies.
Into your imagination.
And the marshmallow mountains.
We'll begin.
Get rid of all those silly convictions you have about the economy. That's what's weighing it down. Quote, we have sort of become a nation of whiners. You just hear this constant whining, complaining about a loss of competitiveness, America in decline. We've never been more dominant, says foreclosure Phil Graham. We've never had more natural advantages than we have today. I don't know. We have benefited greatly from the globalization of the economy in the last 30 years. You fools. You fools in Michigan who have lost your jobs. You fools in North Carolina who have lost your jobs. You fools across the Rust Belt. You fools. You idiots. You whiners. Why don't you go over to Russia and whine? Why don't you open up a winery and export your wine? That way you can make some money. Stop ruining it for all us millionaires. Mr. Graham said the constant drubbing of the media on the economy's problems is one reason people have lost confidence. Yes, it's the media's fault. Of course, it's the media's fault. It's the media's fault, and it's your fault. You people of the reality-based community. You whiners. Misery sells newspapers, Mr. Graham said. Thank God the economy is not as bad as you read in the newspaper every day. I have no doubt, ladies and gentlemen. For Phil Graham, the vice chairman of the Swiss bank UBS, and for his wife, the former Enron executive, I have no doubt that he thanks God every day that his economy is not as bad as you read in the newspapers. There should be no ink. There should be no paper. We should outlaw paper in this country. Because you people read the paper and then think, oh, it's so bad. Ooh, wine. Ooh, wine. I don't even want to take any calls because I don't want to talk to any of these whiners. People make me sick. I'm sitting here standing on a pile of cash because I don't even have room for it all. There's not enough room in the bank for all my money. And I have to hear you people whine about... God! 800-989-1480. Sam Cedar in from Mike Malloy. We'll be right back. We'll take some calls.
Red, red wine, you make me feel so sad. Anytime I see you go, it make me feel bad. Red, red wine, you make me feel so fine. Monkey packing with the panda sweet headline. Red, red wine, you give me wally for zing. Wally for zing, make me do my own thing. Red, red wine, you really know how to love. You're kind of loving like a blessing from above. Red, red wine, I love you right from the start. Right from the start, with all of my heart. Red, red wine in a 80s style. Red, red wine in a modern beat style. Yeah.
There you go, folks. Don't worry.
Little song I wrote.
Be happy.
I want to sing it note for note. Don't worry.
This is the economic plan from the McCain campaign. Come on, folks. Stop your whining.
Trouble.
Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Novam Radio. Number's 800-989-1480. The Sammy Cam is in effect at Sam Cedar's show. You can go to the backup blog at samcedarshow.blogspot.com if you're having problems with it. We're talking about, first of all, this week for John McCain has been unbelievable. There, he has said more stupid things. His surrogates, his top advisors have said more stupid things. His entire Iraq policy has gone up in smoke. Everything has fallen apart for this guy. You could have spread this out over the next 7 months, and it still would have been indicative of a horrible campaign. They can't get anything right there. And not the least of which, that John McCain's top economic advisor says, the economy's doing great, you're a bunch of whiners, it's your fault, it's the media's fault, it's everybody's fault. And the irony, of course, is that this is one of the guys who was the chief architects of this entire mortgage meltdown. And he's John McCain's top economic advisor. His other economic advisors, this guy named Eats Aiken, something like that. You can look him up. He wrote the book Dow 36,000 when 8 years ago he predicted within 3 to 10 years the Dow will be at 36,000. I don't think we're quite there yet. I think we're hovering about 1,000 points from when he wrote that. And if you actually look at it against the devaluation of the dollar, the stock market's down about 30-40% from where it was in 2000. So John McCain has just assembled the best and the brightest. If you are a millionaire, these are the guys you want running the country because they're out there protecting your interests. But for the rest of you, for the other 95-8% of the country, grow up. Just grow up. Let's go to the phones. David in calling from Miami, listening on Wines. Or no, it's Wins. David, how are you?
Hey, how are you doing? Love your show. I just had to comment that if people are suffering, then they're going to say the truth that they're suffering. If they're not suffering, they're not going to say it. I mean, the gas pump, you know, is expensive. You know, food is expensive.
David, come on. Seriously, when you pull up to the gas pump, aren't you imagining that over the past 7 years, the price of gas has gone up about $3.20? Aren't you just imagining that?
No, I mean, it's real. I mean, I don't imagine it. I mean, the average guy doesn't lie. You know what I'm saying? You know,
David, all this type of... of sad talk about the price of gas, where you imagine the price of gas has gone through the roof, where you imagine the price of milk, the price of wheat has gone through the roof. You don't understand, buddy. You need mental help. You're in a mental recession right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole thing. I was listening to Tom Hartman, and basically he's basically saying that people were mortgaging, you know, their future with the credit cards and the houses, and that they're you know, taking loans out against the houses, and now it's coming to fruition. So, but I mean, if they were smart, what they would do is just let everybody stay in their houses and mortgages for 1,000 years, then people would never have to pay up their loans. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I suppose. But David, this whole thing with the incredible amounts of debt, the zero savings rate, the lack of any type of wage growth against inflation, all these right. things, David, listen to me carefully. I'm going to give you the answer.
Yeah.
Just close your eyes.
Right.
Come with me and you'll
just imagine
in a world
marshmallow skies, David. Can you see them?
Oh, yeah, there they are.
Can you see the rainbow, David?
Into
follow the rainbow. There's your pot of gold, David.
All right.
All right, there you go, folks.
In the world.
Solving economic crises one person at a time. Ladies and gentlemen, I suggest that you simply go and get a bottle of Paxil. I don't know. Get some Lexapro, some Wellbutrin, and just keep popping those pills, and you'll see the economy is going to feel so much better. Unbelievable. So Phil Graham comes out. He says you're all a bunch of whiners. I think David just proved it. Unbelievable with the gas prices. Man, you know, I'll tell you something. I don't even go to self-serve gas. It's too cheap. If I have to drive around for an hour looking for full service, that's what I want, because I want to pay even more for my gas. Oh, boy. And it gets worse for John McCain, folks. It gets worse because John McCain's bought into this. All right, we're going to take a break. Sam Cedar in from Mike Malloy. We'll be right back.
Something that I'm supposed to be. Someday we'll find it. The rainbow connection. The lovers, the dreamers, and me.
We are back. Sam Cedar in for the great Mike Malloy. Hello, truth seekers. Numbers 800-989-1480. Turkish police still chasing, and I guess they detained one of the suspects in an attack, a terrorist attack on the U.S. consulate in Istanbul this week. Haven't heard a thing about this in the news, really. I guess it's no big deal now that we, I mean, when you think about how little we've heard about this, how many terrorist attacks are we having on a daily basis? Because we're winning the war on terror. Newspapers reported that the gunman who carried it out had received training in Afghanistan. What? I thought we won that war. I thought we got rid of all the Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. We're winning, ladies and gentlemen, and you're whining. I just got an IM on the Sammy Cam from, obviously, this guy's an American because of this incredible whine. I had to move out of my house because I lost my job. Oh, boo-hoo. And now I got a ticket for illegal parking because I ran out of gas and couldn't move my car to where I now live. the whining. It will never stop from all you poor people. Even you middle-class people, even you upper-middle-class people with the gas is too expensive and I lost my job. Be a millionaire. Just buck up, pull your boots up by your bootstraps or whatever it is, marry an heiress like John McCain has. Now, you may be wondering how it is, ladies and gentlemen, that John McCain was so fortunate to have landed an heiress even while he was married to another woman who was not an heiress. Well, I think this next audio will reveal it. Now, you have to understand that John McCain, the campaign seems to be in complete disarray. Part of that is because John McCain has no idea what he stands for. I think if you sat him down and said, why are you running for president? I honestly don't think he'd be able to tell you. I don't even think he has a lie ready. So one of the people who are attempting to become his vice president, and she never will, is this Carly Fiorina. She was the failed CEO of HP, and she was, apparently there was some controversy because they were spying on their own employees, something to this effect. She was a dismal failure. And she is out there stumping for John McCain. And among other things, well, first off, because people don't seem to realize that John McCain has already come out in this campaign and vowed to get Roe v. Wade overturned via his appointments to the Supreme Court. She's going around spreading the lie that John McCain has never, ever signed on to the campaign to get rid of Roe v. Wade. But she also said that John McCain supported, including or supported statutory legislation that would require insurance companies to pay for birth control for women. Now, this is an issue of some controversy because apparently it is by law required, I believe, for health insurers to pay for Viagra. So when Rush Limbaugh went down to the Dominican for a weekend, came back, he was caught with a whole stack, like enough Viagra, apparently, to to build a small house. And he hid it in other prescription bottles. And so he was detained because apparently that's illegal. So John McCain was questioned about this support, and people had looked at his record and seen that he actually did not support health insurers required to pay for birth control. And here he is asked a question. You almost have to see the video, folks, because he is completely stumped by this, because, of course, he doesn't really pay attention. If there's any bill that requires health insurers to do anything, he just votes no. But he seems to have a great amount of sensitivity about the Viagra questions. So for those of you who wonder how it is that John McCain, a guy who by no means a stellar intellect, certainly had no nothing in form of a dowry, how is it that he landed an heiress who now finances Trollop 1, the aeroplane that he flies around in? Well, I think this may give you a clue. This is number 17.
Insurance companies cover Viagra, but not birth control. And
I certainly do not want to discuss that issue.
It was unfair that health insurance companies cover Viagra, but not birth control. Do you have an opinion on that?
Know enough about it to give you an informed answer.
Now you may think that the audio dropped out for those 10 seconds that it took him to answer that question. So the reporter says, what do you think? Do you think it's unfair that they pay for Viagra and not for birth control? I do not want to answer that question. Well, I mean, do you think it's unfair? Let's play play that again and see just how much time it takes him to. He is completely thrown off about this question. He may be worried that there's some type of follow-up question, as in, Senator McCain, do you take advantage of this health insurance provision that provides free Viagra? Now, let's play this again, Ian, and I will fill the time that it takes him to answer with some music. Please go. Number 17.
Insurance companies cover Viagra, but not birth control. And
I certainly do not want to discuss that issue.
It was unfair that health insurance companies cover Viagra, but not birth control. Do you have an opinion on that?
Know enough about it to give you a informed answer.
He doesn't know enough about it to give you an informed answer.
I don't think so.
John McCain's weak week. Let's go to Angie's listening on KPHX in Casa Grande, Arizona. Welcome to the program, Angie.
Hey, Sam. How you doing? I'm waiting for you to get your own show on there. I wish you'd get on there permanently, but... You interrupted me as I was asking for a snorkel. I was closing my eyes, and all this pile of money was suffocating me. I just was thinking positively, and in that 5 seconds I was thinking positively, I think I earned about $10,000.
Nice. That's great. You may want to go on TV late night and market that.
Sitting in my car just thinking positively. I've been wrong the whole time. But anyway, on a serious note.
Well, Angie, no, wait a second. Now you understand now, with this pile of money in your car, you're now going to have to deal with all the whining from Americans about gas is too expensive. And you're just going to be able to open your door and all the money's going to fall out when you pull up at that pump.
I'm like you. I'm boggled by how these guys are acting and behaving now. They couldn't have behaved worse if they tried. And I'm a crossover Republican. I'm going to be voting for Obama. I'm not thrilled with his actions the last couple of days. But the way that Graham and McCain have been talking and just their actions are just unbelievable. It's almost like it's a setup, like they're trying to lose this race. I don't understand it.
I'll tell you something. I honestly had that feeling today myself. I was like, you know, it doesn't. Not only does it seem like McCain is only half in this, it seems like everyone around his campaign is just sort of going through the motions. But you know, this comment from Phil Graham, I think, really is the essence of the Republican Party. It is.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Last night I was watching late night because I can't sleep after the show. I was watching C-SPAN early in the morning. It was when I first heard about this terrorist attack in Istanbul.
Uh-huh.
And after this press conference, maybe it was before, they had two young Republicans on who have written a book. I can't the Grand New Party. I think one of them is Ross Douthat. He's a writer for The Atlantic. And they're trying to push in the party the notion that Republicans should begin to become less corporate and care about average Americans' economics. They want the Republican Party to be economically populist. And I'll tell you something, it was amazing. They have three different lines, you know, if you're a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent, and no matter where they took a call from, these guys were crapped all over.
Oh, sure.
They were the Democrats didn't believe them, the independents didn't believe them, and the only Republicans called in said, "You people are ruining the party. You're too liberal. We got to get back to conservative values," which essentially, I guess, means you got to screw the little guy.
Well, exactly. I love to get in arguments with some of these hardline Republicans. Define conservative, because if you're trying to run up a $600 trillion deficit, whatever, without taxing, how is that conservative? Why don't you give me that one in a Webster's dictionary? I'd love to see them explain that, and they can't do it.
No, not only can they not explain it, but I'll tell you, John McCain came out with his economic package this week, and it was laughed off the stage. Literally, they bragged about how they had 300 economists sign on to his economic package, but it turns out they actually sent these economists a different thing to sign on to, so that none of them had signed on. And you've got people out there who are saying, this is a story by Josh Marshall. He puts it the best. And I guess this is from actually Mike Allen's piece in the Politico. The general routine is the face of this kind of candidate announcement is that journalists and economists look at the numbers to see if they add up. In most cases, the exercise generates fairly unsatisfying contradictory opinions, with some experts saying one thing and others saying another. Because McCain is claiming he's going to get rid of the deficit by his first 4 years, but all he provides are tax cuts. But here's the thing, Mike Allen writes. McCain doesn't have any numbers. None. Not vague numbers of fuzzy math. He just says he's going to do it. Any other candidate would get laughed off the stage with that kind of nonsense, or more likely reporters just wouldn't agree to give them a write-up. But this is all over the place.
I agree.
It's astonishing.
It is. Well, and just on another note, I know you were talking about the Al-Qaeda bombing in the Istanbul. You know, our own terrorist activities at Langley are attacking us again. Surprise, surprise. I mean, this is all orchestrated, all of this stuff. When I hear people talk about Osama bin Laden and, you know, his terror 16-year-old child, this new prince of terror. This was the latest rage on Fox News this morning. You know, it just makes me laugh. It's like, when is America and as a whole going to wake up as to what this is? This is an intelligence action against ourselves, period.
I appreciate the call, buddy. You got to take a break. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Number's 800-989-1480. And folks, it gets worse for John McCain. It gets much, much worse. And if you are a Republican out there, if you're a conservative, I want to hear what you have to say about this. Are you a whiner, too? Or are you a millionaire? You're going to take a break. 800-989-1480. Cedar in for Malloy.
Oh, yeah, be sure. The wealthy. Always be interested in when people talk about who the, quote, wealthy are in America. I find it interesting.
I wonder what that means, I find it interesting. His wife runs up credit card bills to something like $200,000-$300,000 at a time. And all you whiny people about how much it costs to the gas, do you have any idea what the interest rates are when you charge several hundred thousand dollars and wait to pay it off? So George Bush at the G8 summit, according to the UK Independent, told his fellow leaders goodbye from the world's biggest polluter. Ah, yes. Leading with humility, George Bush. President Bush made the private joke in the summit's closing session, senior sources said. His remarks were taken as a two-fingered salute from the president of Texas, who is wedded to the oil industry. And incidentally, in Britain, the two-fingered salute is much like the one-fingered salute we have in this country. Let's go to line one. Jeremy listening on KTLK in Los Angeles, California. Hello, Jeremy. Are you a whiner?
No, absolutely not. You know, I've been talking about this for a while. I'm actually new to the Republican Party. I've always believed in it, but I was so disgusted with Bush and Cheney and this entire administration. But, you know, I've been so disgusted, actually, with the Democratic Congress that I helped elect in 06 that I actually left the party. I went to being a Republican.
Now, what is it that you were disgusted with the Democratic Congress that led you to believe that the answer was to become a Republican?
War spending bills. The continual passage of war spending bills where they continue to say they're against the war, and then they stamp approval on the spending bills, and they continue to bow down to the president you know, well, whining and crying about it. Now they have majority in both the House and the Senate, and then they turn around and they still pass this BS FISA bill. And it's so much talk and no action.
Jeremy, I understand your frustration with the Democratic-led Congress on the war, on the FISA bill. I agree with you. Why do you think the Republicans are going to be better?
I don't believe the current class of Republicans is better. I joined the Republican Party because at heart I'm actually a libertarian, and I voted for Ron Paul in the primaries.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm a very strong believer in fiscal conservatism as far as minimizing the amount of interference that the government has with people's wallets as far as with taxes and incentives and things like that. And I believe in a free market.
In other words, you must applaud Phil Graham's actions when he got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act, which created a firewall between commercial banks and investment banks. Or perhaps you liked it when he got rid of all the regulation of the commodities market, which brought you Enron and also brought you this mortgage meltdown.
See, actually, the mortgage meltdown, I believe, is actually an action by the Federal Reserve. Just like every other bubble, it's caused by excessive amounts of inflation and credit that's produced out of thin air. We pump. I mean, there was $10 trillion in U.S. existence in 2006. As of today, there's $14 trillion. I mean, you know, you increase the money supply by 40% over 2 years, and of course you have a crash. You know, you have all this new money coming in, buying everything up.
Now, I agree with you, but the new money was a reaction to the fact that there was all these new ways to make money off of these mortgages. And that was a function, explicitly and specifically, of these regulations being removed and allowing these mortgages being packaged, created derivatives, and allowing the investment banks and the commercial banks together. But I'll tell you what, Jeremy, can you hold on through the break?
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's continue this conversation with my friend Jeremy. My friends. I actually have my nose whistle tonight to improve my John McCain impression. I will be playing it on the Sammy Cam during the break, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we've got to take a break. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. The number, 800-989-1480. When we come back, we'll be talking to my friend Jeremy, who has moved over to the Republican Party because he believes they will be fiscally disciplined and will get us out of the war and will overturn FISA, presumably. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Numbers 800-989-1480. Sam McCam is in full effect at samcedarshow.com. Lauren is riding shotgun on the Sammy Cam. You're all a bunch of whiners crying about the economy. But on the phone, I have my friend Jeremy calling in from Los Angeles on KTLK. Jeremy has told me before the break that, Jeremy's upset with the Democrats continually funding this war. He's upset that they passed this FISA bill. Now, you should know, Jeremy, that the majority of Democrats voted against it. I'm not being an apologist about it. Nobody's been railing on this more than I have, but that's just simply the fact. But now you have decided, based upon these votes, that you want to become a Republican, that you're becoming a Republican. Now you must believe, Jeremy, that the Republicans are going to overturn FISA and are going to get us out of Iraq if that's the reason why you switched.
No. I will not be voting for John McCain. I will guarantee that because he's not conservative and he is not a Republican. Neither is George Bush or any of these people. They're not Republicans.
Wait a second. They are Republicans, Jeremy.
They're Republicans in name only. They, Republicans would not pass
No Child Left Behind. They would not expand the size of government by, 30% over the last right. 8 years. That's not a core Republican belief. So,
but wait a minute. Now, wait a second, Jeremy. Now I understand what you're saying. You're saying that they have left the core Republican values, but I would counter that with Jeremy, and I would agree with that. But I would counter that, I'm sorry. The Republicans are what they are. You cannot tell me that the guy who won the nomination for the Republican and who became a president is not a Republican. He is a Republican.
No. They are not Republicans as far as what Republicans actually believe in. You know, they may have taken over the party, but they're not what...
I got news for you. There was a lot of Republicans who voted for these guys.
Yeah, but these people, they don't truly understand what's going on. I mean, we're talking about these red states.
Well, I would agree with that.
You know, they don't understand. I mean, Barack Obama is saying, this FISA bill by passing it, he feels it's something just like that quote you just had, where I feel it's something that's in our, national security's best interest. He's saying right there, he said, I don't believe that we should defend the Constitution at that point because our national security is more important and we can't do both. We can't.
Jeremy, I've already stipulated I didn't like that vote. I railed on it last night. I agree with you on that. But here's the point, Jeremy. You're telling me you're joining the Republican Party. Well, I got news for you. The Republican Party is not the party that you want it to be. It is the party that it is.
No. See, that's how you change it. You want to see. My problem is these people that are voting for Obama. They've already decided to lay down to him. Okay, and it's kind of the same thing with the Republican Party. People like McCain, with the core Republican Party, the reason that they pushed for him is because not because he represented their views. They believed he was the most electable. With Obama.
All right, let me ask you this then, Jeremy. Let's talk about Obama for a second. Are you aware that the New York Times has reported in the Times? I guess it was yesterday or today that. Obama has now proposed overhauling the bankruptcy laws. Are you aware of that? You know the new bankruptcy bill that took place.
I'm with the bankruptcy laws.
I'm sorry. Did you say you didn't have a problem, or you do have a problem with it?
No. I'm familiar with the bankruptcy laws, but I wasn't aware of any kind of reform that Obama was proposing.
Obama proposed on Tuesday to overhaul the bankruptcy laws of 2005. He's going to help out people over the age of 62 to keep their homes if they're facing bankruptcy. He's going to give some relief burdened by bills because of a natural disaster, medical issues. He's going to reform this. Now, that's important. He's the only senator in the entire Senate who has even raised this. He's come out against the California anti-gay marriage amendment, which, as a libertarian, I'm sure you have you would agree with. He's promoted the details of a tax plan which would lower taxes for the working poor and the middle class, raising them on the wealthy, which I guess you wouldn't like. He's condemned bad trade deals.
Symptom treatment. That's what my problem is. This is all treatment of symptoms and not of what the core problem is.
The core problem?
The core problem is economically, by allowing all of that credit, you want to talk about, no regulations. I mean, the Democrats are not discussing any way to regulate inflation whatsoever. They're never going to tell the Federal Reserve how much money they're allowed to print. They never have, and they never will.
Neither are the Republicans. You realize that it was a Republican, Alan Greenspan, who was the head of the Fed, who loosened the money supply.
Wilson was the one that allowed the Fed to have this power, and he was a Democrat. Wilson was the one that enacted the Federal Reserve Act and also enacted the...
If you're going to go on 100 years ago, then all right, Jeremy, I understand where you're coming from, but you understand there's no logic to what you're talking about. You're talking about joining an imaginary Republican Party that's going to be fiscally disciplined when John McCain is only talking... Fiscally disciplined? This guy is talking about increasing the deficit tenfold.
Here's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you don't bow down to your particular party just because they're your party's nominee, and then when they start moving to the center, whine about it, but then still give them your vote. That's exactly what they're going to do.
I've just read off four or five stances here by Obama. I agree with you on the FISA thing, but I've just read off four or five stances with Obama that places him in one of the most progressive Democrats running for president in 12, 16 years. Now, is he far to the left as much as I want him to be? No. Has he committed and vowed to get our troops out of Iraq? Yes.
Yeah, but that's all talk. I mean, he could get into office, and I could easily see us coming up with excuse after excuse, because he said 8 months ago unequivocally he would vote for telecom immunity retroactive, and sure enough, he did.
Well, I mean, you may be right, Jeremy, but I'm banking on McCain. Banking on Obama, because look, and here's the thing, Jeremy, and I appreciate the call, but I mean, if you're going to be talking about a hypothetical Republican Party that exists nowhere, and I got news for you, after John McCain loses, and I was saying earlier, I was watching this on C-SPAN last night, the Republicans called in, the Republicans on the Republican line, saying they hate John McCain. He's not against gay marriage. He's not tough enough on immigrants. The Republican Party, if you think the Republican Party is going to, after John McCain, move more towards fiscal responsibility. I mean, look, they were out of power for years. They owned all three elements of government. And what did they do? Pork barrel spending went through the roof. Earmarks through the roof. Spending through the roof. Fiscal discipline out the window. We went from a surplus to a massive deficit. They raised the national debt ceiling 5 times. They doubled the national debt. So when you find that Republican Party, Jeremy, that is going to come in and is going to be fiscally responsible, that is not going to legislate morality, well, you tell me, and you see how many people vote for it. I'm sorry, the Republican Party has gone off the rails. And after John McCain loses, they're going to go even further off the rails. They have only one, and why is John McCain the nominee? Why is John McCain the nominee? Why was Ron Paul laughed off the stage in those Republican debates? I mean, what you're witnessing, folks, when John McCain loses, the Republican Party is going to go into the wilderness, and maybe in 30 years, when Jeremy is eligible for Social Security, which will be protected by Barack Obama, even though John McCain thinks Social Security is a disgrace. We've got this one. It's number 6. He was at his so-called public town hall forum in Denver on Monday. This is the one where that 61-year-old librarian was ticketed and thrown out because she had a sign that said Bush equals or McCain equals Bush. And this is what he said about Social Security. This is number 6.
Many of the proposals that are being created for people of my generation no longer include Social Security because of the belief it will not be there. Tell me how you plan to fix it.
Thank you very much. I'd like to start out by giving you a little straight talk. Under the present setup, because we've mortgaged our children's futures, you will not have Social Security benefits that present-day retirees have unless we fix it. And Americans have got to understand that. Americans have got to understand that we are paying present-day retirees with the taxes paid by young workers in America today. And that's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace, and it's got to be fixed. Now, how do you fix it?
What are you talking about?
Did you hear what John McCain just said? He just described the very essence of what the Social Security program is. That is, workers paying into the system to take care of our elderly, to ensure that they have a retirement that in their golden years, they do not spend it eating cat food. And then when these younger workers, when they retire, the younger generation will pay for them. This system has worked for 70 years. It has kept 2/3 of our elderly out of poverty, and John McCain says it's a disgrace. This is your Republican Party. I wish you very good luck in changing it. Enjoy. We'll talk again in 30 years. You tell me how well you've done. Sam Cedarin for Mike Malloy, 800-989-1480.
Man, take a seat, Chipper. violence still occurs, but it's spasmodic and much reduced. Civil war has been prevented, militias disbanded. The Iraqi security force is professional and competent. Al-Qaeda in Iraq has been defeated.
Well, then, it must be time for us to go home, John McCain. That's what now three or... Are we up to four Iraqi officials have been saying? Now, of course, John McCain said, well, I didn't believe Maliki even said it. Then he said, well, it was just politics. I mean, now, what does it tell you about the political situation in Iraq that a politician and multiple politicians must come out and say, we demand a timetable for withdrawal? That lack of sound you hear is John McCain's reply. It's like Viagra to him. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to be talking to Ray McCormick. He's a journalist and filmmaker based in Zurich, Switzerland, where there are no whiners, like this entire country full of whiners. He is the filmmaker of the documentary A Crude Awakening, The Oil Crash. I got news for you, folks. Not a pleasant scenario. Don't know if I buy into this peak oil, but it seems to make sense. And what is it? T-Bone Pickens, that right winger who, oil man, he's a big peak oil guy, pushing wind power and, of course, natural gas, which he coincidentally has a huge financial stake in. So John McCain, chief economic advisor, said that you're all whiners. You're all whiners because you think the economy is bad. Dave, listening in Tempe, Arizona on KPHX, the flagship. Dave, are you a whiner?
I think so.
Ugh! Why don't you just become a millionaire?
Well, actually, I am a millionaire, but that's another story.
You millionaire whiners, you turncoat!
There you go. What I wanted to comment on, all of these talk shows that they're out after the politicians. I spent 20 years as an organizational consultant, and what I noticed was is the system creates a lot more defects than a lot of this. Until we change that deregulated system or Reagan economics, you're going to continue. We are continually going to have the Phil Grahams and the other.
Yep.
So we can attack those politicians all we want, but as long as that paradigm is that this is working. We've had 30 years of Reagan economics. I happen to know people that knew Reagan. He considered the middle class whiners also, by the way, but he was smart enough not to say it like Graham.
Right.
And he's literally, this deregulated capitalism, as we've seen, will take this country down the tubes.
Now, and you know, the truth of it, Dave, is that we're not really talking about deregulated capitalism. What we're talking about is unfettered corporations, because there's regulations all over the place, but they have stripped all corporate activity of regulations. I mean, there's plenty of things that I can't do, but the bottom line is that we always have regulations. They've just removed those that have constrained corporations and simply, but, you know, you still get tax breaks, you still get enterprise zones, you still have, First Amendment rights if you're a corporation. But apparently we're not allowed in any way to keep them essentially from committing fraud.
Well, I basically am a socialist. I believe capitalism will self-destruct. Right? No matter how you try to do it, it's for profits. That's the idea behind it. It's doing its thing. It's doing what it should do. And Reagan just kind of hurried up the process. So when the Berlin Wall came down and everybody made fun of the communists, I sat there and thought, our day is coming.
Yes.
Because you got to find that delicate balance between cradle to grave. I would love one of those libertarians. I would love one of them to explain to me where in the world their economic policies work. I would just, they won't do it. I get on their website. They won't even respond. I would love to see where that wide open economic policy would work.
They tried that whole free market haven in Iraq. I mean, that was a big part of the neocon plan for Iraq, and of course that blew up in our faces.
They tried it, and now that's why Putin's so popular. He's turning it back around. He said this didn't work. We created a few billionaires, but unless you have a middle class, you're going to have an unstable society.
No, you're absolutely right. And we're going to, you know, this guy, Jeremy, I was just talking to, was talking to me about Woodrow Wilson. You want to go back another 10 or 15 years from Woodrow Wilson, another 20 years, and there was a reason why this country was so messed up, because we had this unfettered capitalism. I agree with you, Dave. I appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
All right, I got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Ray McCormick. He's the filmmaker of A Crude Awakening, The Oil Crash. More whining, except for this guy, of course, is, I think he's British. All right, we got to take a break. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Get your calls later in this hour. See you soon. We are back. It is Sam Cedar filling in for the Mike for Mike Malloy on the Mike Malloy Show. This is Nova M Radio, and on the phone is Ray McCormick. He is the filmmaker of the film A Crude Awakening, The Oil Crash. Welcome to the program, Ray.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, I got to tell you, Ray, this is not necessarily the feel-good movie of the summer. It's a great film, but it basically outlines this massive, I think, dilemma, understates it, that the world is facing in terms of what happens when our addiction to oil is basically we may have to go cold turkey.
Yeah, that's probably a good way of putting it, and I think people are starting to do that now anyway. At least that's what we're hearing over here in Europe. You know, people are already starting to drive less in the U.S. and car sharing and other sort of measures to sort of cut down their oil consumption.
So basically, you outline the broad strokes of this theory that the world may be reaching peak oil. What tell us exactly what peak oil means?
Okay, peak oil really describes the point at which, you know, the world's oil production can not grow anymore, so it reaches a peak. And you know, because it's a non-renewable resource, you know, after a little while on that peak, there's only one way to go, and that's down. So, you know, the production will inevitably start to fall off. And it looks like, you know, when you see the price increases we've had, it looks like we're kind of on the peak now, and you know, it's a question of how long that will last. But maybe, you know, some people are saying 3 years, other people are saying 5 years. So in 3 to 5 years' time, you know, oil production is actually going to start to fall off, and that's when we really will be, as you put it, you know, going cold turkey.
And your film outlines that oil production is down almost across the board in terms of the countries that have been producing oil for the past 100 years or past 50 years. And of course, this is a time where you would anticipate at these type of numbers, you would see an increase in production, at least a sustaining of the level of production, because there's so much money to be made.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, there was a period, I suppose, in the 80s and going into the early 90s when oil prices were extremely low because, you know, the production, you know, the amount of oil that was around exceeded the demand or could easily meet the demand. And that's no longer the case because a lot of these big producers, you know, they've been, like you say, they've been producing for a long, long time. I mean, America was the number one oil producer in the world, you know, at one stage.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I really didn't know that I learned from your film was that America, up until the 30 years, how many years ago?
Well, you know, in the 50s, before Saudi Arabia really started producing oil, America was the number one oil producer in the world in the 50s. And it was still producing an awful lot of oil right up until 1970, which is when America reached its peak of production. And, you know, anyone can go and look at the numbers, and nobody in the world, even you know, a certain person in the White House, you know, would dispute that America's oil production has just gone down and down and down and down since 1970.
And in 1974, a guy named Dr. King Hubbert predicted that America would hit the American oil production would hit its peak, I guess, in somewhere in the late or mid 90s.
Just let me get you right there, because it is, you know, there's quite a few facts in the film, and sometimes it's easy to mix them up. Now, in 1956, he predicted that American oil production would peak in 1970. And he was absolutely right. But at the time he said that, people were trying to shut him up, and he worked for Shell, you know. And most people in the oil industry were saying he's talking rubbish. But in fact, he turned out to be absolutely right. I mean, it's easy to do this, actually, because, you know, first of all, you have to find oil before you can produce it. So, you know, all you have to do is look at the amount of oil that's been discovered. And then you can predict, you know, when your production peak will reach, because, you know, it's a certain amount of time, and it's roughly 40 years after the amount of oil you discovered starts to go down. So he did that, and he did the same for the world, you know, and he predicted that the world would reach a peak in the 90s, and, you know, he was predicting that in 1956, so he wasn't far off, you know. At, you know, 10 years later, we're just about there, you know.
The interesting thing here is that this is not just a question of, I mean, part of it is that demand has increased, but it's simply that there's not enough oil to match the demand, there's not enough oil to match demand from 10, 15 years ago.
Well, I guess another way of putting that would be that the world has been consuming more oil than it's been producing for 15 years, you know. So sooner or later, you know, you're going to reach the point at which you can't even keep up the production, you know.
And one of the things that I found really striking about your film is because, you know, with the notion of stopping global climate change, with the notion of the cost that oil is bringing, at least to this country, not just in dollars, but in terms of we're obviously spending billions of dollars to secure it with our flight of fancy in Iraq, as it were.
Yes.
Of course, the hundreds of thousands of lives that are basically being paid as a way to secure the oil supplies that Iraq has, and probably also the neighboring Saudi Arabia. Your film, I guess maybe I'm projecting, or I was projecting, was, okay, now I'm waiting for the series of solutions, and your experts basically run through all of the notions that people have that can solve this crisis, whether it's ethanol or hybrid electric fuel engines or switchgrass or vegetable oil or wind. And each one of these, basically, your experts say, not going to cut it.
No, I mean, even if you add them all up together, it's probably not going to provide the same. You know, it's such a unique substance. It has such a high energy quotient, you know, and it's so adaptable, it's so unique. I mean, we use it for everything. It's not just about the fuel in our cars, or you know, it's the food we produce is totally dependent on oil for the energy to actually, you know, to drive all the machines, you know, to make the pesticides. You know, we rely on gas for the fertilizers. It's a whole range of things, and so replacing it will be impossible, you know, with one thing, and replacing it with even all of the energy, you know, possible sources of other sources of energy that we have will also be impossible, because of the fact that it's such a concentrated form of energy, you know. I mean, the amount of wheat or sugar or whatever that you have to grow, you know, to get the same amount of, you know, to produce one barrel of oil, or the equivalent of one barrel of oil, is huge, you know.
And of course,
and we've seen what's happened in the last few weeks as American wheat producers, you know, are selling their, you know, selling their wheat to produce fuel. You know, suddenly there's not enough food to go around anymore.
So, you know, what we're seeing here is this, this is one of those problems where there is no real solution to this. I mean, you know, at least in terms of, well, we could kick the oil habit, and we could substitute with a series of these other things, but they simply don't add up in terms of to maintain the way of life. And your film also argues that, in fact, it was the discovery of oil which led to a population boom because of its ability to produce more food, for its ability to change the way that people live. And so we're brought to that point in the film, and then the question is, okay, well, then what's going to happen?
Yeah, there's a good question. And, I mean, you know, your guess is as good as mine. But I mean, I think there are things that we absolutely have to do, and one of them is to change our ways of, you know, our way of living and our levels of consumption. There's no way to maintain our levels of consumption now. There's just no way, you know. So I think we have to simplify our lives a little bit, you know, and get used to, you know, life in a world where there's going to be less and less oil, you know?
Well, I mean, Ray, let's talk about this because, I mean, you know, it's one thing for me to, you know, for your film to suggest to our listeners that, like, look, you know, use your car less, start thinking about growing some food in your backyard. But there's really nothing, at the end of the day, this, as an individual, I mean, this has to be broad societal policies that are put in place that basically ask people, like, look, don't expect to fly as much, don't expect to drive as much, don't expect to have all your food provided for you cheaply. I mean, really what we're looking at here is...
All of those things. That's exactly all of those things. Yes, we're looking at a whole shift in the way that we're going to live our lives. That's what I think, yes.
And really, the suggestion, at least, and there's nothing explicit in the film that says it, but the suggestion is we may just have to wait until this is a reality that's forced upon us, and in which case we could be looking at not being able to sustain the same population levels around the world. We could be looking at major, maybe not necessarily famines, but food shortages, and we're going to be looking at a situation where I think one of the people in the film said that they had a student who came up to him after class and said, "Do you think my grandchild will ever fly in an airplane?" And he said, "You know, that's a very good question, because it's quite possible that air travel may be reserved only for the richest of the rich."
Yeah, I mean the fuel that's used to run jet engines is kerosene. It's a very, very concentrated form of energy, and there's no substitute at the moment. Certainly, no substitute out there for it whatsoever. You know, so and I think that there's a company in South America who are experimenting with using ethanol to drive propeller planes. So, you know, maybe we're going to be back to, you know, longer journeys in propeller planes like we were in the 50s, you know?
Mm-hmm. So basically, at the end of the day, I mean, because we got to wrap this up here, there's, you know, what advice would you give somebody who subscribes to this notion that we may be at peak oil and that over the next 15, 20 years, things are going to radically change? If we cannot actually get a political change, what can the individual do at this point?
I think very difficult for, you know, if you're kind of caught up in a society that is run on the basis of you know, cheap and plentiful energy coming from oil, it's very difficult for you to decide as an individual that you're going to become totally independent of this without kind of opting out of society, as it were, you know. So it has to be, you know, the change will have to come about from individuals becoming more kind of active citizens rather than passive consumers. And changing the way that they, you know, reducing their consumption, but at the same time putting really pressure on their politicians, giving them a mandate to actually, you know, to legislate in a way that's going to, you know, prepare us for what's coming. Because if we wait until, you know, it's sort of here, then we're going to be in deep trouble.
Ray, from your mouth to our politicians' ears, Ray McCormick, he is the producer, director, and writer of the documentary A Crude Awakening, The Oil Crash. You can find out more information at www.oilcrashmovie.com. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. When we get back, we'll take your calls, 800-989-1480. Thanks again, Ray.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. 800-989-1480. Mark Maron's going to be joining me in the next hour. Let's go to the phones. Jack in Jackson County, Tennessee. Welcome to the program, Jack.
Hey, hi, Sam. Nice to listen to you here.
Ah, I appreciate it.
Sam, listen, I've been going around the peak dollar thing with some, peak oil thing with some friends, and I agree with the details, but I think the name is misleading, because what they've got is this terrific price sensitivity, and there is still billions of barrels left, and so as the price goes up, there comes a point, and I think we've just hit it, that people will use less and find other substitutes. So what I've been saying, my idea is that really the better name is peak dollar, which we hit about 8 years ago. And
so by that you're saying basically it's about how much it costs to pull it out of the ground.
No, the cost of pulling it out of the ground remains the same. It's cheap for in Saudi Arabia. It's $2 to $3 a barrel there. And in the Gulf of Mexico it's maybe $15 to $18 a barrel. No, it's the value of our dollar. This
uh-huh.
is the real hidden thing. We're in debt $54 trillion. This is our real governmental obligations, and we keep printing money. And now everybody in the world knows it. So the price of oil to us is shooting up. The price to people in euros is not so much.
Well, I mean, it is going up in euros, but it's not going nearly with the same rapidity. I would agree with that.
That's correct. And now the Saudi Arabians, you know, who knows if they can pump anymore? But for them, if I was them, I would be glad to let more of it sit in the ground instead of pumping it up to get more dollars that are increasingly worthless.
Right. Well, I mean, we'll see if they end up pegging, basically, if the oil dollar becomes the oil euro, essentially.
Well, they can't really. They're hooked. It's an amazing story that I wish you guys would get into. It's like 65 to 70% of all the financial instruments in the world are monetized in dollars. Everybody
yeah.
has got them. But anyway, the bottom line is, it's going to be a long, slow downhill. It ain't going to be it's no crash.
Well, I hope you're right, Jack. I appreciate the phone call.
Okay.
Let's go to Matt, listening KTLK in San Bernardino, California. How are you, Matt?
Good, Sam.
You just got a minute or two, buddy.
Okay, yeah. I wanted to say, you know, it seems that Obama now, he's changed position and he's endorsed a lot of Bush's policies, FISA, the immunity for telecoms, the faith-based programs. He's for gun rights now. He's anti-partial birth abortion. He's even, you know, he even said that he may refine his Iraq policy based on the conditions on the ground. But I don't see how any really true, real progressive could actually vote for Obama, because it seems like a vote for Obama is now just a vote for a third term of George Bush's policy.
Are you going to vote for John McCain? I mean, Matt, honestly, like, you know, here's the situation. I understand what you're saying. I could argue that there are also some progressive policies that Obama has, but I agree with what you're saying. I'll stipulate all that. Who do you want? John McCain or Barack Obama?
There's not that much difference.
Well, you got no problem with John McCain then?
They're both a third term of George Bush. They both.
But you can't have both of them. You got to have one of them. Which one do you want?
There's no difference now. They're both a
Matt,
third term.
See,
of
this
George
is the
Bush.
Thing. You got to answer that question. You got to look yourself in the mirror. And I appreciate the phone call. And believe me, I understand what you're saying here. I'm not as worried about the rhetorical moves to the right, but the FISA thing really bothers me. But you have to ask yourself, who do you want to be president 2009, January 21st? If you want John McCain, then don't vote for Obama. Vote for John McCain. It's either McCain or Obama. Going to take a break. Be right back. Mark Maron will join us. We're back! Sam Cedar in from Mike Malloy. 800-989-1480. You're all a bunch of whiners! Just to prove the point, I got my buddy Mark Maron on the phone. Mark, how are you?
I'm great, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
No, Mark. Sam Cedar call. It's Sam Cedar. I'm in for Mike Malloy tonight.
Listen, Mike, let me tell you something. You call me a whiner. You know what? I'll be honest with you. We are a nation of whiners, but you know what the problem is? We should be screaming. We
right.
should be screaming at the top of our lungs for what people like that bastard, Graham, and his friend McCain and their cohorts have done to this damn country. We should be screaming. That's our big mistake. We're not whining. We should be yelling. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
And how did you turn into like some 85-year-old Jewish man from Brooklyn, too, you sound like?
Listen, Mike, my emotions are a little close to the surface. I'm going through a lot of problems of my own.
I know, but before we get to that, there's a couple of things I want to talk to you about, Mark. It is Sam. It is Sam, buddy.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Sure thing, Mike.
I just had a caller. Who basically said, you know, there's no difference between Obama and McCain. You know, voting for Obama is a third term of Bush. And, you know, even the most left, even the Green Party supporters who are talking to me on the Sammy Cam at SamCedarShow.com during the breaks are saying that even they will acknowledge there is a difference between Barack Obama and John McCain.
Listen to me, Randy. What I want to tell you is this, is that if anybody, first of all, the one thing I have no patience for is people like, you know, I haven't decided yet. Really? Where are you retarded? Seriously. You can't decide between the guy who was in a cage for 5 years and is crazy and the black man who makes sense. You can't decide? Now, look, I'm not going to begrudge John McCain, you know, whatever he went through in that wrong war and his service to this country, fine. You want to call him a hero? Fine. But you know what? He spent 5 years in a cage being tortured. You know what that means? Disqualified. Sorry, disqualified.
So right out the gate, before you even hear anything about John McCain's plan to destroy Social Security, before you hear anything about his 95% voting record consistent with Bush as opposed to Obama's, which was about 5%, before you hear anything about the fact that Obama wants to reform the bankruptcy bill, Obama wants universal health care, not as good as single payer, much better than John McCain's plan to deny people with pre-existing conditions health care, to basically make it a consumer product where you actually get a tax benefit if you don't use health care, as if this is something people are saying like, yeah, you know, I just go into health care because I get a good break on it.
Listen, Rachel, what I want to tell you is that the truth of the matter is
is that I believe that Obama is the right guy for a lot of reasons. Those are my personal reasons. But I also know that whoever gets this job, and I've said this before, is going to be holding the biggest bag of flaming poop in the history of the Republic. Now, the fact that the Republicans are running McCain means really one thing to me, and we've talked about this before, Stephanie, is that, listen, is that the Republicans don't want it. You know, what they want is at the end of 4 years is to have the black man holding a bag of flaming poop, and they can say, look, it exploded in his hands, and they want to run the Republic for the rest of time. I believe that's their plan. Our hope is that Obama will execute, you know, all of those great ideas that he has, or at least start moving towards that with the help of a left-leaning Congress and Senate, God willing. Correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that at the end of the day, there's one of two guys who is going to be president. And would you not agree, Janine? And one of those guys will either be Obama or it'll be McCain. And so, you know, at that point, you have to make a decision. Who do you want to be president at that time?
McCain is dangerous. And I can't even believe that Republicans don't believe that. At some point, you have to get past ideology. You have to get past what people are promising they're going to do, what makes you feel good, and realize, okay, realize that he is a troubled man. And again, I have empathy, I have sympathy, I have compassion, but he is not qualified mentally to be president of the United States. You know, aside from wherever he stands ideologically or whatever his past is or whatever his record is, I feel bad for the man. I have a certain amount of compassion as a human being for the man, but he is not mentally fit to be president of the United States.
All right, let's take a phone call. Let's go to Scott on Sirius Satellite Radio, calling from St. Louis, Missouri. You're on the phone, Sam Cedar and Mark Maron. I'm filling in for Mike Malloy. What's going on, Scott?
Yeah, well, I remember when Ralph Nader in 2000 was saying that there was no difference between George Bush and Al Gore. And now 600,000 deaths later over a lie.
Exactly.
I think there was a difference. And
yeah, there are hundreds of thousands of dead Iraqi civilians, 4 million refugees, 2 million internal. There are 4,000 U.S. Service personnel. He's absolutely right. We just lost him. But, I mean, Mark, that's the point, isn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not happy with this FISA vote. I think it's I find it very disturbing on many different levels. But, I mean, at the end of the day, there is a fundamental difference.
You've got to vote. On some level, Americans are peculiar, and the reason why people can't make a decision is because they vote on these weird little motions in their fluttering hearts. They all of a sudden they're like, you know what? He just made me like him. They don't listen. They don't really care about what they're saying. A lot of people, unless they're intelligent and are trying to parse through what can and can't be done, but most people are just going to vote on impulse, which is pathetic and tragic. But I think that, you know, despite that, if you can't see, you know, past the fact that, you know, look, you know, I just spent $70 filling up my gas tank.
No, you whiner!
You whiner!
Do you know how, when I hear...
Okay, wait, let me rephrase that. I spent $70 filling up my gas tank! What the hell is that? I'll tell you what that is. Years of Bush policy and years of killing people for oil that is still expensive and still completely based on a lie, the war, and also the fact I can't get health coverage. I'm in between health plans. This is me personally. I'm in the middle of a divorce because of Bush. Well, not really, but I mean, I'm going to blame a lot of things on
him. Let's take another phone call. Arnold calling from Lexington, Kentucky, listening on Sirius Satellite. Welcome to the program, Arnold.
And Mark on the phone at the same time. you guys don't remember me, do you?
What?
You don't remember Auto Man? I call your show all the time when you was on XM, man. I loved your show.
Oh, all right. I remember you, Arnold.
You remember me, man. Hey, man, I'm telling you. That guy talking about Barack Obama, man, ain't no different, John. Come on, man. I mean, we talking about the Nazi Party. Come on. When he turned to the center, it would have been no more different than Hillary Clinton that got the nomination. She'd have been farther to the center than he is, you know?
I would have to agree with that. I mean, don't you think, Mark? I mean, you know, Arnold's saying that that no matter who the nominee would have been from the Democratic Party, of course they moved to the center.
Yeah, Arnold, you the truck driver?
Yeah, man. You listen, man. Remember I told you I love you.
I remember you, bro.
I loved you when you did the Chinese CEOs when they got line them up and shot them.
That's right.
That was such a beautiful thing.
I think Arnold is absolutely right. And you know, and despite what some Republicans are saying that you know that Obama is a Muslim communist gay Martian, that you know you have to understand that. Whatever he's doing right now, no matter what tactics he's taking, which I agree with you, Sam, the FISA vote was questionable. But the truth of the matter is
at least questionable.
Hey, let me tell you with some real sleaze balls. These two guys you saw the other night, Sam, that Joe Lieberman and that Lindsey Graham. You know, every time I see those guys, they remind me of some kind of National Geographic movie. You know, with the tiger sharks swimming around with the little sucker fish. Hanging off of them, you know, or you watch the rhinoceros standing there with the two great birds on his backside picking the ticks off. He tolerates them, you know. Those guys are so sweet, man. I can't stand them.
Have you ever heard the joke? The Jewish Republican and a gay Southerner walk into a bar. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Listen, you guys got Joe Lieberman and I got Clarence Thomas. What are we gonna do with them?
I don't know. Let's put them in a room together, see what happens.
Yeah.
Oh, I appreciate the phone call.
Oh, man.
All right.
So, Mark, hang with us on the other side, will you? Because I want to talk to you about this wine thing. Phil Graham, John McCain's top economic advisor, saying that Americans are just whiny. That's their problem. They're imagining the recession.
I wish they would whine more.
We got to take a break. Sam Cedar filling in for Mike Malloy. I got Mark Maron on the long line. I'm going to make him hold during the break. We'll be right back. 800-989-1480.
Hey, look, Lois. The John McCain Experience. I
want to
be president!
Don't you forget about me. Don't you forget about me. But you won't come by.
I love a rainy night. I love a rainy night. I love to hear the thunder, watch the lightning when it lights up the sky. You know it makes me feel good. Well, I love a rainy night, it's such a beautiful sight. I love to feel the rain on my face, taste the rain on my lips. In the moonlight shadow.
Man, I forgot how this goes. Eddie Rabbit or something like that? Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. I got Mark Maron on the phone. We were doing it up Sammy Cam style at the breaks, folks. SamCedarShow.com. Mark,
let me tell you something. That what's starting to percolate in what I see in people is that there's a weird kind of despondency. There's a weird sort of, you know, detachment that the realities of the economic adversity that we're dealing with as a country, specifically because of the tactics and the maneuvers of this administration, is starting to percolate towards the surface. It's not just in road rage, but you know, one thing Americans do, which isn't wine, to be quite honest, it's worse. Americans spend a lot of time trying to act as if everything's okay. There's a selfishness that is involved because of the deterioration of community for a lot of different reasons. That, you know, people are these islands that really want other people to believe that they're managing okay. And I can see it now, that there's a tangible amount of panic, pain, frustration, and anger that is seeping through the surface. I mean, I do comedy, and it used to be on the weekend, you'd look forward to the weekend, those were the good shows, but now there's an edge to it because the weekend is not a day of rest. The weekend is, for a lot of people, the days that they go home, and they realize just how bad things are. They realize they get home on Friday, and they're like, you know, how the hell are we going to afford this? Whose idea was it to have a family? I'm going to kill somebody.
Right.
You know what? Let's go to a comedy club.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that will help.
It's a lot more challenging, I'll tell you, but, you know, I'm the right guy for that because I will talk, you know, frankly and realistically about things, which is not as marketable as you might think. But it's interesting to me what even happens in entertainment. The type of entertainment that is so popular now is complete avoidance. You know, complete
total fantasy.
People want to remain in denial and consumed with entitlement despite adversity. And that, in a lot of ways, that type of it's not even a belligerent, but it is fundamentally, I think, American. And in when times are good, it's not necessarily bad. You know, there is something about, you know, kind of, you know, trying to get through something with a certain amount of dignity is one thing. But there was a time when times got tough, you know, people came together and they didn't whine, they screamed. And they screamed for a type of justice that they're entitled to by a functioning government and a functioning representational democracy that hasn't been completely sold out. And the sad thing is that people are now embarrassed to express that frustration. I'm not talking Republicans. I'm just talking people in general are so concerned with appearing like they're keeping their crap together that they're not acknowledging the cancer they're giving themselves by not speaking their mind and their frustration.
Well, I also think to a certain extent that whatever's responsible for this to a certain extent is the media, but it's also been, I think, frankly, the right wing. The lack of connection between what people are experiencing and the policies that our government pursues. And I think, you know, people don't understand, you know, no, I don't remember anybody saying anything. Now, of course, Phil Graham pushed through the deregulation of the commodity markets. I think it was in like December of 2000 when everybody was just trying to figure out who's going to be the president. But you don't hear any of this stuff. People do not make the connection that you have these mortgage crises because of what the government does. People don't make the connection between the fact that you have these you have inflation and you have rising gas prices because they were printing money like it was going out of style so that George Bush could get reelected.
You know what that disconnection is? It's a fundamental thing in the heart, in the mind of Americans, that there should be some, you know, entrepreneurial spirit, that this is a country where people can make the best for themselves and find their way. And how that's become bastardized in a cancerous free market in a global economy is that, you know, when things are done in terms of deregulation and leveling the playing field or opening markets, what individuals don't realize is that individuals become grist for the mill. They become disposable. They become not a concern. They become part of a bottom line. They just become, you know, just completely they are no longer represented in any way in the name of business. But in the heart and minds of some Americans, they believe that that business spirit, that ability to do what you want, is an important American ideal. But when it happens on a corporate level and when the government gets, you know, involved with deregulation, they don't realize that they become garbage.
That's right. I mean, people even forget that this country built its economic strength on what, you know, guys like Tom Friedman would call protectionism now.
That's right.
All right, Mark, hey. So you got a split, right?
Yeah, good luck with the Senate race, Al. It was great talking to you.
Hey, stick around. Just stay on the Sammy Cam with me for a couple of minutes before you go.
Okay.
All right, we got to take a break, folks. We'll be back. I'll take some calls, I promise. Mark, Juan, Howard, James, Rob, I'll get to you on the other side. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Number's 800-989-1480. You're all a bunch of whiners, folks. You're all a bunch of horrible whiners. That, of course, is, according to John McCain's chief economic advisor, update on the Karl Rove situation. Karl Rove again has decided, I don't need to go and testify in front of Congress. Maybe they put a Fox logo underneath their microphones. Maybe he'll show up. Former White House advisor Karl Rove defied a congressional subpoena to testify Thursday about allegations. This, of course, is looking into the, I mean, this huge, it's a massive scandal. It was the firing of the U.S. Attorneys. And that was actually more symptomatic of the corruption that was going on in the Department of Justice. Some of that corruption led to the imprisonment, the political prosecution of former Governor Don Siegelman of Alabama. They wanted to talk to Rove about it because Rove has been implicated in this prosecution of Don Siegelman. He didn't show up. He claimed executive immunity just as a blanket principle meant that he never had to show up in front of Congress to testify about anything. Executive privilege, excuse me. This is a huge leap in the use of executive privilege. It's never been done before, as far as I know, that just merely the notion of executive privilege means you don't even have to show up to testify in front of Congress. The only thing they're going to be able to do is to is inherent contempt, as far as I can tell. And I don't know if they're going to do it. Politico reporting that Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi said this morning that House Judiciary Committee may hold hearings on an impeachment resolution offered by Representative Dennis Kucinich. She said this is a Judiciary Committee matter, and I believe we will have some attention being paid to it by the Judiciary Committee. That, I don't know. Maybe she's turning Conyers loose. We can only hope that that is the case. Let's go to the phones. Mark, listen to KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. Been holding for a long time. Appreciate it, Mark. How are you?
Yeah, hi. I had a couple questions for you. I'm kind of a middle of the road, person politically. I lean towards the right on some things and to the left on others.
Mm-hmm.
I did agree with you when you said that, capitalism without restrictions or without control, especially for the corporations at the higher level, I totally agree with you on that. But one thing I wanted to ask you about was you were saying that Social Security, or at least it sounded like you were saying Social Security was a good thing.
Oh, yes. I actually believe it's probably one of the singular most successful government programs in the history of the world.
Okay. Well, see, that's what I didn't understand because I've been reading about it, and everyone I know that, you know, is a recipient, especially a lot of older people like my girlfriend's grandmother, just to name a few. I mean, they basically, from what they've told me, it's an upside-down pyramid, and due to inflation and the way our money system works, basically you put in a lot more than you end up getting later, just because of how fast inflation goes up, and then also, you know,
it is actually pegged to inflation. I mean, that's simply not the case. I mean, it depends on how long you live, and this, of course, I'm not talking about if you have a disability, it helps you out. If you you're an orphan, it helps you out, and it depends on how much you live. What Social Security is, Mark, is Social Security is essentially retirement insurance. And everybody buys into it. And if you're lucky and you live that long, as many people, most people do, you will be insured of having a retirement that will prevent you from being living in poverty.
Okay, yeah. And see, that, I mean, from what I've read about it, that's exactly what it was supposed to do. But, I mean, isn't it true that a lot of different politicians, particularly some of the Democrats that have borrowed money out of
No, in fact, the truth is, you remember when everybody mocked Al Gore for saying we need a lockbox? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that.
What he was saying is that the money for the Social Security goes into a fund. It's not like literally a fund, it's not in a separate bowl. It is a line item on a balance sheet. And what George Bush did is he raided this money to pay for the tax cuts on the wealthy. Now, there, in its stead, he left IOUs, which were treasury notes. Now, understand, the U.S. government has never, ever defaulted on a treasury note. So the money itself is not there. It will have to be shifted, but it is there because it's a treasury note. And if we were to default on this treasury note, then you would find that the entire our entire economic system would collapse. So the money is there. The fact of the matter is that even by the most conservative estimates, if we do nothing for Social Security, you will receive full benefits till 2042. At that time, you will receive, if we do nothing, 80% of benefits until your great-great-grandkids are on Social Security. All we need to do is basically raise the cap or create a donut hole. It's a very small fix to ensure the solvency of a program that keeps many elderly, orphans, and widows and disabled out of poverty.
Okay, now, well, what do you think about privatizing it? I mean, like having the choice to privatize it. Like, if you, I mean, because
if you have the choice to privatize some of that money, you will destroy Social Security system. So really, what you're talking about is it's not a question of choice to privatize. The system works because everybody buys into it. The system works. It's like any other insurance program where you diffuse the risk. And so if you were to engage in privatization and you were 65 years old today, Mark, you know what you would be up? You would be up S Creek without a paddle because you would have no money.
But that's what I don't understand, because it seems like if you privatize it every week, you know, when you get your paycheck and they take it out, you're putting it into an account that only you can access. So 50 years later, it's still there because it's your account, but
unless Mark, the stock market goes down.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if the stock market went down, don't you think that would affect how much or what portions of Social Security check people got?
No. Not at all, Mark, and that's the difference. I appreciate the call, buddy. The fact that it is not being used to inflate the stock market is exactly why Social Security is so rock solid. And look, Republicans have, the day that Social Security started, 1936, 1939, I can't remember, the Republican platform said that this Social Security system will never, ever work. That was 70 years ago. 70 years ago, Social Security still remains one of the most successful government programs in the history, I believe, of the world. Howard and XM, listening in upstate New York. How you doing, Howard?
Hey, I'm doing great, Sam. You know, there are already private accounts. They're called individual retirement accounts.
Yes, you certainly have. You can certainly play the stock market. You can put it in 401k. You can be as risky as you want, or you
absolutely
can be as conservative.
You can put in $5,000 a year, and your spouse can put in another $5,000. And if you're over 50 years old, it's $6,000 per year, and it goes up every year. I do this for a living, and you know, I tell people whenever they complain about Social Security not being privatized, and they think it's some kind of a panacea. The reality is, FDR, when he created Social Security, he said it was only there to be a portion of your retirement plan.
One leg, I think, on a three-legged stool or something
exactly
to that effect.
Not the reason I called, though. I was really annoyed by the guy who was on just before the top of the hour saying that there's no difference between McCain and Obama, and he doesn't know who he's going to vote for, if anybody. Talk about whining. I mean, that's whining.
Right. I mean, okay. It's fundamentally a misunderstanding of the reality. We had another caller who said there's some 500, 600, 800,000 dead Iraqis who would argue that that is not the case.
Right. I'm looking at Time Magazine online right now. Michael Kinsley posted a column this evening called "Divided They Fall," talking about the Democrats, and he goes, "The securing your base, which is what Obama's been doing, and then moving to the center." And this is his comment, is the fundamental move of politics, like the basic steps of the foxtrot.
Right.
And he says, if you listen to a lot of right-wing talk radio, like he says he does, you hear the troops being rallied. Okay, so maybe McCain isn't really our type, but he's our nominee. And consider the alternative. Obama's the most radical left-winger since the French Revolution, and on and on and on. And basically, the GOP has turned their guns on Obama, full blare. It's going to go continuously from now until November. And if the Democrats can't get their act together and aren't willing to put aside the differences that they've had, recognize that Obama's being a realist. He's a pragmatic political candidate. If they go off in a snit and refuse to pony up money, because Obama's going to need the money now that he's refused the federal funds, and if they walk away and close their wallets, I think the country is going to be screwed, and your guy who called before the top of the hour is going to look back and go, gee, how did it happen that we have 9 Scalias now on the Supreme Court?
Right.
Who's responsible
for
that?
I think there's a very – it's a myopic and it's a narrow view. I'm not convinced that guy just wasn't a troll.
Could be.
You know, but at the very least, he gives us the opportunity to have this conversation, because I think you're absolutely right, Howard. I mean, I think at the end of the day, politics is about compromise. I would love to have the perfect candidate, and I would love everybody to believe what I believe, and I would love that my vote to be simply an expression of everything that I believe, but that's simply not the reality.
Right, and look at the candidates that we were basically given this year. I mean, they were decent people for the most part, you know, a couple of crackpots in there like Mike Gravel, whatever, you know, and some people who had zero personality. That's just who the Democrats are. But look at our field compared to theirs.
Right.
Look at who we've got now instead of who the Republicans have. I mean, anybody who would hire Phil Gramm to do anything clearly has disqualified himself as a candidate.
Yeah, in fact, I would say he's disqualified himself as a thinking human being. All right, we got to take a break. Sam Cedar filling in for Mike Malloy. We'll take more calls when we get back. 800-989-1480, the SammyCam. Still in full effect at samcedarshow.com. Of course, we're streaming live at novamradio.com. We'll be right back.
The message I want to send to everybody is, you're not going to agree with me on 100% of what I think. Take a chance on me.
We're back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy for one more night and one more segment. I'll be here tomorrow night. We'll have more guests. We'll have more fun. More Sammy Cam. More of Ian's great music. More of Billy's great phone work. Phone play. Lauren holding down the fort on Sammy Cam. Let's go to James, KPHX, Phoenix, Arizona. Thanks for holding, James.
Hi, how you doing, Sam? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling.
I actually had some misconceptions on the oil that guy was talking about, peak oil. My dad, let me let you know where I get my information from, so I'm not just talking out of my ear. My father just recently left Aramco. He worked for Aramco for 14 years. So he had an inside line on the production. A misconception is that Saudi Arabia is at their peak production or whatever. They're actually only about 55 to 58% of the oil that they can actually pump out of the ground at any one time. They can increase that by about 20% in a couple of weeks, and they could increase it by about 40% in 6 months if they refurbish the plants and stuff that they have. So they're holding back their oil because of the high prices. That's one problem. And I don't know if the government knows this, if they're in bed with them or what, but it's obvious. The other problem is with the coal to oil production. I know there's comments about or problems with the CO2 suppression and all that. Well, if there's such a problem with it that the government, you know, the Congress and all this are saying, well, we can't suppress the CO2, then why are they doing it for their military? They're doing coal to oil left and right for their military tanks and all this kind of stuff because it's cheaper to do.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't let us use it.
Well, I mean, the fact that Saudi Arabia is not running, you know, they're running 20-30% less production than they actually could at any given time, does not necessarily mean that they haven't reached that peak of what their oil supplies are.
Okay.
But be that as it may, I think the bottom line is that, you know, we saw it happen in this country. You know, King Hubbert basically predicted in the 50s that we were going to reach peak oil, and we did. And
right.
We are no longer the world's greatest oil producer like we were back in the 50s, and that's not simply a function that people stopped drilling. It's simply a function that the oil started to run out.
Right. Well, the other problem that I see is that the Congress and the presidents, whatever, have continuously inhibited alternative processes. I mean, George Bush just put a moratorium on 119,000 or 119 million acres or something in California, Nevada, and Arizona on solar power plants, whether it be the concentrated or the photovoltaic or whatever.
Right.
Well,
I mean, Ronald Reagan, when he came into office, he tore down the solar panels that Jimmy Carter had put up, for the White House.
Right.
I mean, yes. I mean, there has been a fundamental lack of resources going towards alternative energy, and we're way behind the curve on this.
Well, another problem is the corn ethanol. I mean, it costs more to produce a gallon of ethanol than you actually get back from it. I mean,
yeah,
it costs like
that's my understanding
25.
As well. Yeah, I mean, my understanding is more actually like calories burned than in what you actually produced at the end of the day.
Right. I mean, sugar ethanol is a lot cheaper and all this kind of stuff. I mean, we're essentially burning our food. We're talking about food shortages and stuff. And
yeah,
I mean, what is it, like 20 or 30% of the corn crop that exists in the United States goes to this ethanol?
It's
right?
A problem. All right, James, I got to go. I appreciate the call, buddy.
All right, thanks.
Let's go to Rob in KTLK, Orange County. Thanks for holding, Rob.
Oh, thanks, Sam. I miss you and Janine. You're unbelievable. I miss Janine a lot. Hey,
you should listen tomorrow night then.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to say that the TV media news, it's not news. It's lies. And it's so disturbing that they don't bring up the Dennis Kucinich proposal of, you know, so many things, the FISA bill.
Yep.
It's almost like they're just completely trying to protect their advertising, and I don't get it. I mean, the dumbing of America as the plasma TVs get nicer and nicer and HDTV comes in. I'm worried about this election coming up because I don't see the people getting the truth.
Well, I agree with you. It's not just the dumbing America. I mean, I think our media is dumb. I think they're dumb and lazy. And I just don't think that they're willing to dig into it. And there's just not enough people out there who have any integrity. And at the end of the day, they're rather just, they're careerists above all.
They should be ashamed, completely ashamed. And they should be called out name by name. And the CEOs and the presidents, I mean, I just don't get it. That's all I wanted to say is I'm disgusted by it. You know, they can have their million-dollar jobs, but it's a pathetic way of life. It's not a giving way of life. It's a taking way of life. Selfish.
Well, I agree with you, Rob. I appreciate the phone call. Mark, I got to say goodbye. I'm sorry, buddy. End of the show.
Yeah, just wanted to say I think we ought to hold the Supreme Court accountable for putting Bush in illegally.
You're absolutely right. I agree with you. In my mind, that's when the crap really hit the fan in this country. All right, folks. It's been a fun one tonight. We'll be back tomorrow night. Janine Groffalo will be joining us. We'll be talking about the garbage warrior. Maybe that's our future, folks. Maybe that's our future. All right, take care of yourselves. Mike, I don't know where you are, but I hope you're having fun on vacation.